Chapter 4. To call the NRO director a plain man was in itself an overstatement. NRO director William Pickering was diminutive, with pale skin, a forgettable face, a bald head, and hazel eyes, which, despite having gazed upon the country's deepest secrets, appeared as two shallow pools. Nonetheless, to those who worked under him, Pickering towered. His subdued personality and unadorned philosophies were legendary at the NRO. The man's quiet diligence, combined with his wardrobe of plain black suits, had earned him the nickname the Quaker. A brilliant strategist and the model of efficiency, the Quaker ran his world with an unrivaled clarity. His mantra, find the truth, act on it. When Rachel arrived in the director's office, he was on the phone. Rachel was always surprised by the sight of him. William Pickering looked nothing like a man who wielded enough power to wake the president at any hour. Pickering hung up and waved her in. Agent Sexton, have a seat. His voice had a lucid rawness to it. Thank you, sir, Rachel said. Despite most people's discomfort around William Pickering's blunt demeanor, Rachel had always liked the man. He was the exact antithesis of her father, physically unimposing, anything but charismatic, and he did his duty with a selfless patriotism, shunning the spotlight her father loved so much. Pickering removed his glasses and gazed at her. Agent Sexton, the president called me about a half hour ago, in direct reference to you. Rachel shifted in her seat. Pickering was known for getting to the point. One hell of an opening, she thought. Not a problem with one of my gists, I hope. On the contrary, he says the White House is impressed with your work. Rachel exhaled silently. So what did he want? A meeting with you. In person. Immediately. Rachel's unease sharpened. A personal meeting? About what? Damn good question. You wouldn't tell me. Now Rachel was lost. Keeping information from the director of the NRO was like keeping Vatican secrets from the Pope. The standing joke in the intelligence community was that if William Pickering didn't know about it, it hadn't happened. Pickering stood, pacing now in front of his window. He asked that I contact you immediately and send you to meet with him. Right now? He sent transportation. It's waiting outside. Rachel frowned. The president's request was unnerving on its own account, but it was the look of concern on Pickering's face that really worried her. You obviously have reservations. I sure as hell do. Pickering showed a rare flash of emotion. The president's timing seems almost callow in its transparency. You are the daughter of the man who is currently challenging him in the polls, and he demands a private meeting with you? I find this highly inappropriate. Your father, no doubt, would agree. Rachel knew Pickering was right. Not that she gave a damn what her father thought. Do you not trust the president's motives? My oath is to provide intel support to the current White House administration, not pass judgment on their politics. Typical Pickering response, Rachel realized. William Pickering made no bones about his view of politicians as transitory figureheads who passed fleetingly across a chessboard whose real players were men like Pickering himself. Seasoned lifers who had been around long enough to understand the game with some perspective. 2 full terms in the White House, Pickering often said, was not nearly enough to comprehend the true complexities of the global political landscape. Maybe it's an innocent request, Rachel offered, hoping the president was above trying some sort of cheap campaign stunt. Maybe he needs a reduction of some sensitive data. Not to sound belittling, Agent Sexton, but the White House has access to plenty of qualified gisting personnel if they need it. If it's an internal White House job, the president should know better than to contact you. And if not, then he sure as hell should know better than to request an NRO asset and then refuse to tell me what he wants it for.